Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson. We're lucky to be joined once again by Robbie Calland from Cox Media. He writes about college football there, but he writes about the Atlanta Hawks and covers them frequently. Based out of Atlanta, he's always at Phillips Arena, and he gave us some more perspective on America's team, the Atlanta Hawks.
La música de Harry Fraud.
Correspondent.
Yes.
So twice in 1 month, we're so lucky to be able to have this opportunity. But seriously, the Hawks. You're covering America's team, Robbie. what's going on with the Hawks? How does it feel to cover the greatest team of all time, or you know, at least the greatest team of the last 2 months?
Sure. It's somewhat surreal considering what the Hawks have been for so long. They're such a fun team to watch. They're such a fun team to cover. Like, everybody gets along. They're a fun group. And they play fun basketball. It's a little bit strange, but it's definitely a treat. And then they just keep winning. Like, everybody in Atlanta is just kind of waiting for the game when they, like, the letdown. And, like, everybody expected to be a couple weeks ago when they were on national TV. They're like, this is what the Hawks do. They finally get on national TV, and then they lose. And they went out and won, beat the Thunder. And, like, it just eventually got to the point where, at this point, people actually believe that this team is actually good. Because they are. I mean, they play such a good brand of basketball. They have probably four All-Stars, especially with Wade being hurt now. Somebody's going to get his spot. And they play such good defense, especially the last 2 months. It's been insane to watch this team play defense.
Also, I'd like to address that on top of having a great team, as far as, contenders, I feel like contenders always have great bench antics. And
oh, yeah.
Mike Muscala is like, he's my MVP. And then obviously Bazemore, where, you know, that could be the shift in, like, the Warriors should have never traded him to the Lakers because they lost something without Baze.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because I tell people a lot that I think Bazemore coming in on his own, if he never touched the floor, Bazemore was worth 5 wins this year. I'm dead serious because the entire mood of that locker room is so different because, like, he's so infectious that he's got guys – like, he's the reason Muscala, Dennis, Thabo, Mike Scott, he's the reason that entire bench unit has as much fun as they do on the bench. He's the one leading that charge. Like, last year, Dennis would kind of stand up and do a little towel popping. But, like, now Dennis and Baze have, like, choreographed reactions. Moose is doing the upside-down three goggles when Korver touches the ball.
That's my favorite thing in the league right now is the upside-down Mike Muscala three goggles before the ball's even in the basket.
Before it's, like, he does it as soon as Kyle catches and starts going up. And my favorite thing about – so I remember when it first happened, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago and first kind of got – like, somebody finally got a picture of it, and I was at the game, and Kyle had just been going off, and I went up to Moose after the game, and I was like, what is this? You've got to explain this to me. And he just started laughing, and was like, well, I don't know, it's just a thing. And I was like, I mean, how did it come about? Like, what? And he was just like, I don't even know. He was like, but it's actually really hard to do, and then he, like, shows me how he does it. takes a lot of flexibility. You know, I think he has to stretch his elbows and shoulders and wrists before the game to get ready for it, because, like, it's pretty difficult to do. If you ever try it at home, you might hurt something.
That move that Muscala does, we used to do that in high school. In the hallway or in class, if someone looked at you with those goggles, the Mike Muscala goggles,
yeah.
Unless you put your fingers around your eye, you had to lay down on the ground. it's the stupidest thing ever, but
sure.
That's part of the reason why I love the Muscala 3 goggles so much, just because of how many memories that brings back for me personally. But no, America's team, and Muscala is great. Bazemore is great. We should rename the podcast Bazemore Banter.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, I love Bazemore, and I do like him as, like, he's just a great role guy just to have on your team, like, also an emergency guy. Like, he can play a little bit.
Well, I mean, he actually plays a lot for us.
He is now, because he didn't really play back when the Blazers and the Hawks first played earlier this month.
Yeah, he gets, you know, like 7 to 10 minutes a night now.
Wow.
And, like, he'll be in there sometimes. They'll just leave him in for, like, crunch time, like, fourth quarter minutes. Like, I know against the Nets last night, he was in pretty late in the fourth quarter. His defense is just so good. He's such a good energy guy. And he just – when they have him in, you know, he's kind of that third wing defender behind Damari and Thabo, where they can kind of rotate those three guys, and it's kind of – they just go with whoever is the hot hand at the three. It's interesting, like, because they'll – you know, in the end, you're going to have Korver on the floor. Like, you're not finishing a game that's at all in doubt, which the Hawks haven't had a ton of games that have been in doubt recently, but you're not going to finish a game without Kyle Korver on the floor, so they just kind of rotate. Usually it's Damari, but depending on the matchup, you'll see Thabo, and if it's a smaller guy where they want – a little more speed out there, they'll put Baze out there. We saw that against the Nets last night a little bit. But Baze is playing a lot. His three-point shots improved a little bit this year. And, I mean, his defense is just tremendous. His active hands and his positioning's gotten better as the year's gone on. He's kind of learning where he's supposed to be in the system. And it's just incredible. This team's really is like 11 dudes deep. As far as who can play.
The scenario you're describing, I'm sure, would make Blazers fans a little jealous considering the inconsistency that they've had at the three this year. With Batum, I think that's probably one of the things that this year is just kind of – I mean, Batum looked pretty good last night, but he was more of like – he was basically playing point guard last night.
Yeah.
Just he's not really providing a lot of the things that he has in the past. And if they could have like that hot hand scenario, I'm sure they'd take it. But that's something the Blazers really haven't had this year, and that's why I think a lot of people think they'd make a move for another wing to play, you know, just to have a shooter out there next to Lillard and Matthews, just to have another threat too. But this matchup, it's going to be different because the Blazers aren't going to have Freeland or Lopez. Oh, well, they didn't have Lopez last time. They didn't have Freeland, or they did have Freeland, but then Freeland went out
in that game, right?
In that game, and he's not going to come back. His return seems pretty far off. But yeah, I mean, the Hawks are they doing anything different? It seems like they're kind of just doing more of the same. And how much do they? Do you think that their turnovers, like, this is more of, like, I guess a long-term Hawks question than for this matchup, but do you think that their ability to force turnovers is something that is going to be able to carry over in the playoffs, basically?
Well, I mean, I think so. I mean, because it's not that they're just turning over bad teams. They turn over everybody. And I think the biggest thing that helps them force turnovers is There are a few teams that do a better job forcing one or two extra passes in the league than the Hawks. Like, you don't get your first or second option on a set. You usually have to kind of keep moving it. And they do a really good job of just, you know, they're super long. Like, I mean, they don't have a ton of, like, size height-wise, but everybody on that team seems to have in kind of an over, above-average wingspan. I mean, you think about Thabo, and even Korver's really long, and Bays. Dennis, when he's on the floor, has a freakish wingspan. Millsap's got long arms. Horford, they all have long arms. They're active in passing lanes. So I think they'll be able to turn people over. Whether they can turn those into fast break points as easily in the playoffs, that's, you know, the pace tends to slow down a little bit. But I think with the Hawks, I think pace is a little overrated with them. They don't play at, like, a crazy high pace. They just move the ball a lot in the half court. Like, they don't take a lot of early clock shots. This isn't a 7 seconds or less Suns type thing. They take a lot of late clock shots, but they just move the ball so well and move the defense around that those shots at the Hawks getting a shot with 5 seconds on the shot clock is usually a really good shot, whereas a lot of times it's a rush shot for other teams.
So the Hawks are also, I mean, they're 7 games in front of second place Toronto. And with Wade being out indefinitely, like, the last two spots in the East are going to be basically up for grabs, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of funny. As a Hawks fan, there's just the dream scenario is that the Celtics get the 8 seed and the Hawks get the 1 seed just for a little cathartic release and just beat the hell out of the Celtics for 4 games.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
After all the series against the Celtics, and even if it's, you know, literally none of the players on the Celtics that beat the Hawks are still there, but it would feel so good for Hawks fans if the Celtics backed in. But the Celtics are trading everyone away. I really do think Brooklyn is the one that ends up just falling kind of ass backwards into it, for lack of a better term. Because, like,
the Joe Johnson series, that'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is like, Brooklyn probably actually keeps those games relatively close. Like, it's probably a 4-1 series win for the Hawks, but, you know, Joe could go off for one, and if Darren Williams is back, that's, you know, that could make it a little more interesting. But, you know, it's one of those things where the bottom of the East is so bad, and Detroit doesn't have Jennings for, you know, he's out for the year with the Achilles. And
well, I mean, you got to be, if you're the Hawks, you got to be scared of Lance. Obviously, you know, the double OT bank shot.
No one's scared of the Hornets. I don't think the Hawks would have any problem facing the Hornets in the first round. That'd be, you know.
Yeah,
Kemba being out for an extended period means, you know, it could be really, I mean, there's going to be, like, two really mediocre teams to bad teams that get in the playoffs in the East just because somebody's got to make those last two spots. And, you know, I think without Jennings, I think it's going to be tough for Detroit. That's really tough for them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, as just an unbiased Eastern Conference observer, that was like a huge blow to my Eastern Conference watching season. Because yeah, I loved the new Brandon Jennings.
Yeah, I mean, Stan Van Gundy done such a good job with him. He was playing well. He, you know, that team was fun to watch. You know? The post smooth new version of Brandon Jennings Pistons were a lot of fun. And now that's gone, and you just,
that had the potential.
They got DJ Augustine running point a lot. Like,
that had the potential to be such a good first round series. Like, if it was Hawks Pistons.
Oh, that would have been, honestly, that matchup, the Hawks weren't going to lose that series, but it could have been 6 games just because Drummond goes off for like a 30-21 night because the Hawks can't box him out, you know?
Yeah.
And Jennings has a big game. And if, you know, it was one of those things where it would have taken Jennings and Drummond both having big games in the same game, but they can both do that.
Yeah, I feel like looking at it, I mean, if Wade was healthy, I guess I'd say maybe Miami in a series would be the toughest. But I thought Detroit, out of all those teams, would have been the toughest for any of the, you know, any of the East teams to play if they had Jennings, but they won't. And yeah, now it's just like, ugh. And you know, Orlando feels, to me, they seem like the team that has the most talent out of all these teams, and they're in the worst position right now out of all the teams.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they have a lot of talent, but I mean, Jacques Vaughn is terrible.
Yeah,
like Jacques Vaughn, like, when you talk to him, he's a pretty, you know, he's a good guy to talk to. Seems like a nice guy, but he is just awful as a coach. His rotations are terrible. Magic fans hate him. He refuses to play Mo Harkless. He refuses to play the young guys the way that they probably should be. The thing about, the Magic, they've got, you know, Vucevic is a borderline all-star. Oladipo's a lot of fun when he's healthy. Tobias Harris is a really good basketball player. Elfrid Payton's going to be a stud if he ever learns to shoot that basketball. And even if he doesn't, he can still be a very good point guard.
Yeah,
but you look at that team and you're just like, how are they underachieving? Oh, they have Jacques Vaughn.
Yeah, like that's
it's like the Kings with Ty Corbin. It's like just you have talent all over the board.
Yeah, and
don't have a lot of depth. But that's the thing. Like, coaching when you have depth is pretty easy.
It's
what you do when you don't have a lot of depth. How you manage rotations.
That kind of
will tell you.
I think I remember my impression of when they hired Jacques Vaughn, and it's just funny how reputation changes so quickly. Like, Jacques Vaughn was like, he was like a Popovich guy. Like, he had studied from Popovich, and like, everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, Jacques Vaughn's going to be great, for a young team. And like, it feels like they don't know who they are ever.
Yeah.
And that's you never like to see that, especially in year three, a team that doesn't have an identity. That's kind of unfortunate. But and then Indiana, like, they play harder than anybody on this possible list to make the playoffs, but they just have no talent.
They just have nothing.
It's honestly a little bit depressing for those of us that, you know, like, not those of us, but just like sports in general, how people are like, oh yeah, well, you know, hard work is really gonna always get you by. But like the Pacers are like the number one example. Like, nope,
nope. Doesn't matter how hard you try if you don't have any talent anywhere, it's just not gonna work out.
Yeah, that's a depressing group. But also, you know, I do enjoy. Frank Vogel is just a hell of a coach. I'm glad that he is not going to get fired or anything stupid like that, which a lot of people were talking about for a little bit.
No, I mean, he's coaching that team to play well. They just, like you said, I mean, who's their best player?
Roy Hibbert.
Okay, that tells you everything you need to know. Roy Hibbert should never be anything more than the best defensive player on team. Even that, like he should never be the third best player on the team. Like, he's fine, but like, no, I don't know. That, yeah. Now the East, it's, you know, I was talking with some of the Nets guys last night, and we were talking about how miserable the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be, but the second round and after is going to be really good. Like, there's five good teams in the East.
I was talking about this on my last podcast with Patrick Redford, that I think the East is, like, way better this year. Like, just as an entire, like, basketball product compared to last year, it is just so much more entertaining, and it's going to be way more compelling come playoff time. I agree.
Absolutely. Like, you know, there's five teams that are good. The Bucks are fairly entertaining. They just don't have enough firepower to do much.
If they had Jabari in the playoffs, they wouldn't win a series, but it'd be a lot more fun, and I'd take them a lot more seriously.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the matchups, and it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna, like, the Hawks are gonna get the one seed, barring just an absolute collapse. Like, they have a 7-game lead. Like, it would take a lot for the Hawks not to get there. And especially because the team I think that can make a run, which is Cleveland, is so far back.
Yeah, they're 11 and a half back. Wow.
Like, Cleveland's not going to make the run. Like, I think the ideal scenario for the Hawks is that Cleveland and Chicago somehow jump Washington and Toronto.
Yeah, they wouldn't want the Bulls or the Cavs in the second round. That's not good.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
The Cavs especially, like,
they look good.
Oh, sorry. The Cavs especially, like, I don't care who you are, playing the Cavs this year in the playoffs, like, I don't care what the Cavs have struggled with, anything like that.
They're flourishing right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're flourishing right now. And the thing is, playoff LeBron is a totally different beast.
Yes, and we haven't even seen playoff Kyrie yet. And that's going to be incredible, I'm sure. I've seen the last three games of the Cavs, and it's starting to look like, you know, like it should, like we thought it would, a little bit at least from Kyrie and LeBron.
It's starting to get there, you know. They still don't have the depth that I'd like them to have.
I love Shumpert off the bench.
I think Shump was a big addition. I know the thing is with his injury, there's fear. You know, when you talk to guys, I've talked to a couple personnel folks that said they were a little bit scared off because he is that injury is something that can be quickly aggravated.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, he's out for another, like, 2 or 3 weeks. So if they manage him well, that's a big addition. Because they needed somebody that could just play defense. Like, they just didn't have that. Nobody on that team could play defense.
And
Sean Marion was their best wing defender, and he's, like, 80.
Yeah, they absolutely needed just a guy who was young, who could come in and just defend guys and just... You know, just come out there and play defense while Kyrie, you know, just goes off. You know, because, like, they don't need, like, it was perfect for them. And now they have, you know, the depth that can go against, you know, teams that have multiple wings like the Hawks. Like, you know, the Hawks would, in a series, if they hadn't had added Shumpert, I mean, you think about their depth then, you know, they couldn't contend with any of those wings that the Hawks have. They have a stable, and, you know, they'd be struggling to hang on, except for LeBron, of course. But it's going to be the Cavs, where they end up being seeded is going to be very interesting, where the Cavs and the Bulls end up. Bulls got a fantastic win against the Warriors the other night.
Yes.
That game
was insane.
That might have been the game. I mean, I don't know if it's the game, but it was close to the game of the year right there.
It was so much fun to watch. I mean, I think the one thing that took away from it was the fact that Golden State couldn't make a shot.
Oh, yeah. They
were, what, 0 for 12 on threes in the second half, which led to the whole live by the three, die by the three. You can't win with the three.
I can't believe we still have that conversation.
How is it possible?
Like, why have we not moved past that? How is it, like, the Spurs and the Heat and the Mavericks, all of those teams shot a ton of threes. Like,
literally, like, the last, like, six champions have been close to the top of the league in threes.
It's unbelievable.
What are we doing?
It's unbelievable. Like,
and this is my thing when people – so here's the thing that I hate the most right now is – the Hawks are to the point where no one's denying their ability in the regular season. Like, you just can't. They've won 17 straight games. You cannot deny this team. However, it's, will they be the same old Hawks in the playoffs? Can you win without a superstar? Can you win without a go-to guy? And I'm like, the reason you can't win without a go-to guy is if you have a system that requires a go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
if you have a system that requires the late game strategy being give this guy the ball and go, then no, you can't win without it. But if your late game strategy is to run a pick and roll and to move the ball, which the Hawks do,
yeah,
there's no reason they can't.
I don't understand it. And also, it's like, okay, they may not have a quote-unquote go-to guy in the traditional sense, but Korver is a one-of-a-kind player in the league that other teams also don't have. So it's just like
Korver, Jeff Teague getting to the rim better than he ever has. Paul Millsap, if you really need a go-to guy.
Oh, my gosh. He's so like, clutch and so wet all the time.
I mean, here's the thing about Paul, and this is the thing that Paul Millsap is the best at, and I would say he is the best in the league at finishing with one hand, just like everything he takes around the rim is a one-handed shot, left or right. Nobody finishes like him around the rim taking a little contact as a big man. Like, he is just stupid good at the little bank shots from like 5 feet and in, and he can get to that spot whenever he pleases. Like, he was going – he made – like, KG looks old all the time right now. But, like, a couple of the Nets guys were like, I've never seen KG look as old as he did trying to guard Paul Millsap. He just had no chance. None. Millsap is – first off, he's going to get paid this offseason.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that contract that he has right now is such a steal.
It's funny – Danny Ferry would be a lock for executive of the year if he hadn't, you know, said stupid shit.
Yeah. been stupid and
just don't be racist.
Yeah,
just don't be racist and you're executive of the year right now. He's gonna get some votes. Bud's gonna get votes. Like I've heard that like whoever the Hawks put on the ballot for executive of the year, whoever that is gonna win. Bud could win coach of the year, executive of the year this year. Easily.
That would be amazing if he won both.
Easily. It could happen.
Yeah, no, the Hawks are just, I mean, incredible. And what was their over-under? It was like 30, wasn't it what they have right now? Like 30?
It was 41.5, and they just matched last year's win total last night.
Wow.
So they're at 38.
That is impressive, and also, I mean, yeah, I just, the Hawks, I don't even know what to say anymore about the Hawks. They're just so, so good, and I do think I'm becoming less skeptical of them in the playoffs. I think Millsap and Horford and all those guys and Teague, I think all those guys are all-stars, and I you hear a lot of people saying, but when you have this many, like, very good players, it's really hard to beat a team like this that has like no weakness.
And you mentioned Korver. It's like you have to commit so much attention to him, because if you don't, you're done. Like, the Nets abandoned him like 4 times last night, and he was just popping threes. Like, I think Bogdanovich was trying to guard him a few times and just lost him. And it's like, you just can't do that, because they'll find him and he's just going to be money. And you have to commit so much effort to him that you're leaving Millsap one-on-one, Teague one-on-one. The pick and roll, there's no help from the weak side because Korver's just standing in the corner daring you to help down. Like, it's pretty terrifying, like, the offense. And then their defense is playing so well. That's the only pause for concern, is where they can keep up the defensive effort. But they've done it for 34 straight games. I don't see why they can't.
Yeah, I think when I was looking up, you know, how they've been doing since they've lost twice since November 28th,
which is just silly.
It's unbelievable, and I mean now the Warriors are, I mean, they're only one game back of the Warriors now, so they could have the best record pretty soon.
Just wild.
That's when do they play? When do the Warriors and the Hawks play?
Next Friday, a week after the Blazers game in Atlanta. I cannot wait.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to just sit there. I might not even tweet. That's how good that game is. I might just want to soak it all in.
Yeah, that's one of those that you really should just experience. That's going to be, I mean, I'm sure you'll get to experience it when the finals come around, Because Golden State just looks like they're gonna. I mean, I know they lost to the Bulls, but as you said, they missed like 12 threes in a row.
Right.
Also, yeah, classic live by the three, die by the three. Also, last night, in my mentions after the Blazers game, I don't know if you caught the end of it, but Wesley Matthews and Damian Lillard had like three wide open looks at three pointers,
clean,
and they just didn't go in. And all of a sudden, it was just like, I can't believe that they were taking all those threes late in the game.
That's what the Blazers do.
Yeah, and it's
threes.
Like,
and it works.
And Kyrie beat them by hitting with a three with a hand in his face.
Stupid three. A walk-up, just filthy.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I don't know what you want them to do. I mean, sometimes shots don't go in, and that hurts. I am excited for next Friday because the Blazers do not have a game. I will be...
Oh.
Watching
locked in on the couch.
I will be locked in to Hawks Warriors. I just had to look it up to make sure the Blazers weren't playing because that game is going to be, it's going to be must see TV. It might outrate the Super Bowl.
No, but
I know. Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, the two games I'm most excited for. We got Warriors then, and then I've already got it circled. Sunday, March 22nd, the Spurs are in town.
Oh.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
Gosh,
it's going to be so much fun.
I feel like on the NBA season this year, I mean, there's just so many must-watch games almost every night, except for tonight, which, oh my gosh, the Thursday NBA schedule just looks terrible.
It's not good.
Milwaukee, Orlando, New York, Indy, Denver, Memphis, Chicago, and the Lakers.
What are the TNT games tonight?
I'm going to assume that one of them is Chicago-Lakers. Because it's at, and then I don't know about the early one.
Let's see. Yeah, Chicago, Denver, Memphis.
Denver, Memphis is the other one?
Yeah, it looks like it's Denver, Memphis, just going off of game time.
All right, yeah, you're right then. Yeah, Denver, Memphis. So, I mean, I guess that game looked better earlier in the year when people thought that Denver maybe had a chance of maybe making the playoffs, which they obviously don't now.
Is it me or is there just so many stinkers on TNT this year?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like there's a lot more stinkers than normal. It's a little bit like Monday Night Football.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, this is why I'm excited for next year when the new TV deal kicks in and they add like a full flex scheduling options for those nights because...
Thankfully, we've already seen
because it's so hard. It's so hard for them to just choose
before the season.
Before the season, you don't know. You don't know that the Hawks are going to be great. And if you put the Hawks on and they're like their normal selves, like nobody's watching that.
And nobody knew the Warriors. Like the Warriors were already like one of like they were. You know, a league pass team. They're one of people's favorite teams to watch, but like nobody knew that they were going to be threatening the 72-10 Bulls with point differential and stuff
right.
like that. Like nobody knew that they were going to be like one of the greatest teams in this, you know, start to the season that we've seen. It's just like, or at least one of the most entertaining.
Yeah. It's, they're just so much fun. And like, I don't know. I don't miss a Warriors game if I can avoid it.
I don't either. I watch the Warriors almost – I try and watch almost part of every Warriors game just because they're so good. It's,
you know what's funny is I missed – on Friday, I missed Clay's third quarter. I was out.
I did too.
We were – and it was funny because, like, normally when I go out, like, I go somewhere, they'll have, like, the game on. Just in case, like, but like we went out, we were at like a karaoke bar, so they did not have basketball on. And like, we got home, and I remember waking up and just looking at Twitter. I was like, "What the hell did Clay do?" You know, because I just saw people were just still like, almost 12 hours after the fact, they were just still tweeting like, "I can't believe what Clay did," and I was just like, "What?"
I
finally saw the video. And I was like, I watched that video at least five times in the morning. I just couldn't believe it. The three he hits in the corner where he literally just, like, throws it up.
Poor Stauskas.
Is the dumbest thing. Like, Stauskas is looking around like, what do I do? Is the dumbest three I've ever seen in my life.
I was watching that the next morning. Similarly to the story that you described, I was out with, you know, with friends and saw everyone talking about Clay having 37 and a quarter. And then I woke up the next day and I watched the highlights. And immediately when I saw that highlight, I was just like, Stauskas! I just yelled at the TV. I was like, I can't believe it. Like, it was just, oh, man. It was just unreal. Like, I mean, and the best part of it was that Clay, like, couldn't even believe it. Like, he was just like, what? So I enjoyed that Clay enjoyed that as much as anybody. So that's part of what made it great. So, other than that, you know, anything else you want to say about the Hawks matchup and this game? I mean, I think it's going to be a great Friday night basketball game.
It's going to be fun. I'm excited. Like, you know, anytime the Blazers are a fun team to watch. Like, you know, they're an exciting team. You know, I kind of wish they were healthy. You know, they're more fun when they have all their bigs. But can we talk a little bit about LaMarcus and just how ridiculous it is that he's playing and putting up the numbers he is with that thumb?
Oh, absolutely. And LaMarcus, obviously this surprised everybody, because the day that he said that he wasn't going to play, like, it was like a funeral. Like, they were just like done, and then they go out and lose to Evan Turner and the Celtics. And then, I mean, now he comes back, the team just, like, it was like he literally came back from the dead. They were so happy. And then the thing I was skeptical about more so was his defense, mm-hmm. and then also his ball handling, which, you know, he's really gotten better. His ball handling, he's doing a lot more, you know, between the legs moves. Like, it's gotten a lot better, and I was worried about what effect the brace would have on his hand with that. And last night he was dribbling with his left hand. He took a big shot in, you know, with, like, you know, the last couple of seconds to tie the game with his left hand. He got fouled on his left hand. I think he's just going to tough it out. And it's my understanding that it's not swollen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst thing that he can do to it, he said, was that the integrity of that, like, you know, that thumb joint, it might just not be as stable that mm-hmm. Of that particular thumb ligament, and that where it connects might just may not be. But they said that, you know, I mean, the doctors basically gave him the okay to do it. And I mean, I think he's going to play through the rest of the season right now, because he looks great on offense, and he looked pretty good on defense last night too, protecting the rim, because he basically has to be the rim protector without Rolo right now. I think he looks good. I mean, we'll see though how it progresses with teams knowing that his hand is messed up, and you know, if they go at it and they whack at it, you know, when just like when guys have been playing through injuries all the time, and you know, other teams are going to go after it.
Yeah, I mean, he had what, 38-11 last night?
30, yeah,
12, something like that.
Something like that. I'll double check. I think he had 38 last night, and I think he had two blocks. I mean, he had 38 last night. I mean, he carried them offensively. They had kind of a rough night. I mean, he was their best three-point shooter last night. I mean, he's doing everything. And I mean, he takes so many shots that, you know, a lot of people think, you know, I mean, not a lot of people, they are inefficient shots.
Right.
But it's just what he does for the offense. It's so incredible. Like,
Lillard
will be trapped in the corner and he can just toss it to him and LaMarcus gets a shot up. It's just, it's unbelievable how easily he can get shots.
Yeah, this is one of the things that, you know, the Hawks take a lot of, especially Al particularly. You know, Horford's one of the best mid-range guys in the league. LMA is one of those guys. And it's one of those things where if you're getting the shot the right way, it's not an inefficient shot. I think people have this idea that the mid-range shot is always inefficient. If it's a spot-up look for a guy like Al, for a guy like LaMarcus, that's just money. Like, it's a 47% shot. You know, it's the issue comes when you're, like, if you have guards taking pull-ups and contested stuff, that's when it's a super inefficient shot. And that's why you'd rather see threes than the mid-range, is because, you know, I mean, just from a math perspective, it works better. But if you're – if you have a Horford, if you have a Dirk, if you have a Aldridge, like, there's nothing wrong with a 17-foot jump shot. And I think that's something that I think some teams get too far away from. Like, I look at the Rockets, and they space the floor, but almost too much. Like, there's nothing to keep – like, there's nothing in the middle of that floor, and you kind of need more spatial stuff, especially on the baseline. They don't have anybody that vertically spaces the floor for them.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't really like the abandon the mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think that that's – I mean, we'll see. Again, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the numbers have always, you know, shown, but, like, I don't think a team can – especially in the playoffs, I just don't think you can survive without having an ability to score in the mid-range. Like, because teams are going to protect – I mean, the way Portland defended them in the playoffs last year, it was they just sold out on the three-point line. They switched on every pick and roll so that Harden mm-hmm. wouldn't have a look. And then they made Harden take mid-range jumpers. Like, he right. doesn't do that. But in the series against Portland, he had to. So
yeah.
I do think that – at you know, they're going to have to shoot those shots eventually in the playoffs because good defensive teams just won't let them have it.
Right.
And it's hard to scout in the regular season. So that's why they can still get what they want all the time in the regular season. But when they can focus on the ways that, you know, they're getting threes and stuff like that, I think it's going to be a lot harder. I agree with you that abandoning it. And also, you know, like you're saying about – jump shots for LaMarcus and Horford, just spot up jumpers off the pass or off a pick and roll or pick and pop. Like, those are good shots for those guys.
They're great shots for those. I mean, like, you know, Horford is, when he's on, like, he was like 8 of 9 the other night, and I think 5 of them were just 15 to 17 footers. And, like, that's part of those guys' games. And I think, especially when you can make the baseline part of it, I think that having the baseline option, especially on like a side pick and roll, is super effective to opening up that paint. You know, anytime you can do that, you know, if your center can shoot, if you're, you know, your five, or even like if you have a four that pivots down, if you can shoot that baseline jumper, it just naturally pulls the defender a little bit away from the paint, and then that weak side help's not always there as quick.
I think one thing that's actually hurting the Blazers that you know, hasn't really gotten a ton of attention, and I think it also will help Aldridge, and I think it's definitely going to help Batum, is Lopez. Because Lopez, a lot of people were like, oh yeah, you know, Lopez is just, he's doing the dirty work, he's working hard on defense, rim protector, and I feel like he gets a lot of his reputation from how hard he works on defense, and really not much recognition for how much he does for the Blazers' offense. Like, Tyson Chandler is probably, you know, he's probably the best guy in the league when it comes to setting a pick and rolling to the rim and getting alley-oop dunks. But Lopez doesn't have the dunks, but he has, like, a similar effect on Portland's mm-hmm. offense. Like, when he is rolling down to the rim, he really does suck the defense, and he can finish with either hand in the, you know, around the basket, and he really gives something to Portland around the rim which they otherwise don't have. And I think Kamen is trying to at least replicate the dirty work part of it, but he's just not as good at this stage of his career as Lopez is at just pick and roll and catch the ball on the run, roll, and somehow finish it in the lane. Because Kamen's thing, he likes to bang and take like 3 or 4 dribbles before he gets mm-hmm. a shot up. So I think when Lopez comes back, I think we're going to see – I mean, the fact that they've maintained the, you know, staying in the top three without him for as long as they have is pretty impressive, because I think he's going to give them a big lift when he comes back. I think people, because of how good Aldridge and Lillard have been, and Matthews as well, and, you know, guys like Myers Leonard have played well and had some good moments, but
– Clemens!
Yeah, Myers Lemons. I mean, the revolution is real.
It's happening.
I think when Lopez comes back, people are going to remember how valuable he is to this team because he creates a whole new dimension for them. Because, you know, even Freeland in the pick and roll game, he does something, but it's nowhere near what Lopez can do with sucking in the defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm excited to see Dame tomorrow night.
Oh yeah,
I watch Dame play.
Yeah, you're gonna be there. So how's the media seating at in Atlanta?
You know, it's so there's like a couple folks that sit down low, but really it's only like the AJC and then occasionally one other person will get to sit down like courtside, and then everything else is just above the first level on like the concourse. There's tables and you're just above the 100 section. So one of it, there's like midcourt, and then there's essentially behind the Hawks bench up on top of the hundreds. And then there's like baseline. None of it's really bad.
That sounds pretty good. It sounds pretty good. I mean, our seats up in Portland are around they're above the first section.
Yeah.
Like right by the concourse as well. So
it's not bad. And then there's like there's the old hockey box up top if it's a super full game. It's really I think my favorite thing about the season is watching the local media like TV stations and radio stations begrudgingly start covering the team.
Yeah.
Like they would be much happier
if the Hawks weren't good.
They'd be much happier covering the Falcons or off-season Braves, but they just don't have a choice because the Hawks are so damn good. And
they're America's team.
Yeah, and so it's really funny because, like, they show – you know, these are the people that show up for media day, get their quotes, and then aren't back until, like, the Cavs or somebody maybe is in town. And, like, all four local TV stations were at the Pacers game last Wednesday. I was like, what? I was like, I haven't seen you guys since media day, like, 3 months ago. Like, what's happening here? So it's definitely different.
Did the Falcons hire a coach?
The local area is starting to come around the team. They're selling out games, doing all kinds of stuff.
Did the Falcons hire a coach?
No.
Oh.
Well, they're going to hire the Seahawks offensive coordinator.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. I saw that and it skipped my mind. I just knew that they didn't have Smith anymore. But
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's cool to see that. I mean, hey, good for the Hawks. Good for the Hawks that they're getting the exposure and making those news stations come out and cover them because they deserve it. They're really, really good, and I'm excited to watch them play again. I don't see as much of them as I'd like, and I'm very excited to hear the tunes of Sir Foster while the Blazers play them. It's gonna be fun.
I'm trying to get Sir Foster to learn a couple new things. We're working on. I'm gonna get him to learn some C murder.
Oh,
because like I feel like I'm gonna ask him if he can save that for playoff time. Because like if he can learn that, like I feel like it's just gonna be a wrap for whoever comes into town. If he can get the crowd hype with that. Like, so we're working. Yeah, he's the best. I hope he's an All-Star again this year. I gotta talk to him on Friday.
I'm glad that the Hawks are good, so that so that they're on TV more, so that people realize that this man's a national treasure.
Oh my God, he is he's the best. Because he just learns stuff. He comes out with something new. Like he's always whatever the latest like rap song is, he's on it. Like he learned. He learned I'm in love with the Coco like 2 weeks after that was out. Like, he's on it. He's the best in the league. The best in the business, I'd say.
I will buy a Sir Foster album.
He's got one. If you go to his Twitter page, I think he's got a link. He's got albums.
Oh, my gosh.
Dead serious. So go get that. You're a Sir Foster fan. I'm going to plug my boy. I know he's got an album coming out, or it just came out. I can't remember. I've got to look into it as well for myself.
I have to tell you, I was watching. It was early season League Pass before the Hawks were even very. Before anyone knew that they were very good, and I was like, I was watching with my girlfriend. I was like, you have to watch the Hawks because they have this organist that plays these songs. And like now, before they were even good, like she was like, can we watch the Hawks game for that organist? Because like she'll just request to watch the Hawks game now. Because of Sir Foster.
That's awesome. Album coming February 2015.
Let's go. I want an Amazon pre-order. I'm not kidding.
The album is coming. He's, yeah. I mean, he can't be beat.
He's the king. Well, Robbie, thank you for coming on. Thank you for talking Hawks. I'm so excited for this game. Two great teams. Hoping maybe this could be a finals matchup.
Absolutely.
It would definitely be fun. But all right. Well, thanks for coming on.
All right. Appreciate you having me, Eric. I'm futuristic.